Welcome to MGO Podcast 9.8. I saw some disgusting things, some abominable things. I saw some terrible things this weekend. Stay tuned to hear what the worst of them all was. All right, Ace, can I tell you about the most odious thing I saw this weekend, the most horrendous, the most terrible, the crimiest crime against panda and man that I've seen?
There's a lot of possibilities here, so I'm pretty curious.
I'm talking meat crime.
Meat crime.
Yes. So imagine this. Imagine you're a hairdresser.
Okay.
Imagine you're a Japanese hairdresser.
I mean, it's a reasonable step from where I'm at right now, yeah.
Careful, you're going to be a Japanese hairdresser. And you have clients who come in from Nagoya. I don't know how far away that is from Tokyo.
No idea.
I mean, they have like bullet trains and maybe it's just like 15 minutes, but they commuted for a haircut.
Yeah.
And they were so pleased, and they're restaurant owners. So they go back and they're like, oh, we gotta make sure that this guy knows that he gave us an awesome haircut. So they give them meat.
Okay.
And I've seen the meat, and the meat is... It's just, you know, marbling?
Yes.
Can you imagine the most perfectly marbled meat in existence?
Yeah, I might need to now go and get dinner, but I can think of it. Yeah.
It is that.
Okay.
And he's in this house, you're in this house with five other people, and you're out, you're working, and they see your meat. And they're like, ooh, this is really fancy looking, because it's in a wooden box. The meat is in a wooden box.
That seems substandard.
Well, no, I mean, no, it's...
I mean, it's fancy, but, it's like, fancy. That's not a... I guess you better throw that in the fridge.
No. Well, it's in the fridge.
Okay, good.
It's in the fridge.
Just making sure.
In a wooden box. And the people with the restaurant delivered instructions. Mm-hmm. They're like, here's how to best take advantage of this amazing meat.
Yes.
And you're out. You're doing your job. And this... Your roommates, who are layabouts for the most part.
Oh, no.
They're layabouts.
Layabout roommates. Never good.
They cook and eat your meat.
No.
They did.
No.
And they didn't even leave any for you.
No. Did they at least cook it by the careful instructions?
No.
Ugh.
They cooked it well. They cooked
no.
it well.
No. Okay, so this is the meat crime that you've been tweeting passionately about.
There's a Netflix television show called Terrace House, which is basically a Japanese real world, and it's mostly very nice, and it's mostly interesting because it's an insight into how Japanese culture is different than ours.
Mm-hmm.
And they have like this panel of like six people who basically watch the show, and then they cut into the show, and then they have like 2 or 3 minutes to like talk about it.
Okay.
And the guy, the hairdresser, goes ballistic about this.
Justifiably.
In like a Japanese way. He's not slapping people. He's not karate kicking people. I mean, that would be.
This is an American real world.
Right. No, yeah. What he does is he goes in his room and he goes on a hunger strike and he won't get out of bed. And like, that's probably not the way I would have approached it.
No, not necessarily.
But I can respect the motivation. And if that's what he feels he needs to do when, I mean, you're a hairdresser. Like, how much respect do you think people put on that job? Not that much, right?
Not a ton. You know, it's not, yeah.
I mean, it's not like, you know, you're a doctor, you're a model, you're an aspiring astronaut.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely the three things on top of my head.
And you get this incredible validation of a job well done. Like I might be in a relatively low status profession, but by God, I am at the top of that profession.
I have a wooden box of perfectly marbled meat.
And like this is like a symbolization. Like, how good does that meat taste? He'll never know.
Oh, man. That's devastating.
He will never know.
That's brutal.
And they cut to these, you know, people who talk, and they're, like, making fun of him.
Oh.
They're like, this guy, what is going on with this guy? He's showing emotions. He's reacting. And I was ready to jump through the screen.
Like, and why is this guy not stabbing people?
And there's like a 14-year-old boy, and I was ready to, like, he wasn't even talking, and I'm like, I'm going to strangle you up. So... Yeah, did anything else happen this weekend?
No, I don't think so.
we would like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshore Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Eco-Telligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad.
We have regained our professionalism. Dirt. Slight segue into meat crime.
I just...
It wasn't even a segue. We just started with that.
No, we're...
That's the opener.
I mean, our theme this week is we don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, we've hit some mattresses. We've hit the meat crime.
There was someone in the comments that's like, boy, this game column is a really weird analogy. And I'm like, that's not an analogy. That's just me talking.
At what point did that connect to the game in any way whatsoever? It did not.
I was like thinking about writing, like, here's the point of the, in the column where you expect that I start connecting whatever the hell I'm talking about to football. But I'm not going to do that in this column. And then I was just like, nope, just not going to, not even going to mention it.
I feel like that's like a point to reach as a writer where you can write pretty much anything and someone will just assume that you have made a connection there, even if they don't grasp
right,
it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I just...
They're like, clearly this is just over my head, yeah, this genius mattress column, I just can't quite get a handle on it.
The Emperor's New Mattress Column. All right, 42-13.
Ugh.
I didn't go into this game expecting a win.
No.
I also didn't go into this game expecting that I would see Don Brown's intestines.
No, that was an in-the-face experience.
Speaking of in-the-face, flies.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so we can get the Penn State travel portion out of the way.
Sure, I mean, why even, like, we said the score. That's all we need to say, like, in the actual talking about the game portion of the podcast. We said the score.
So I get to the Penn State press box, which is approximately 4 million years old.
Yeah.
And, the bathroom with the one faucet for hot water and the one faucet for cold water, still there. Yeah, so you can get that really piping hot water and then, you know, move your hand over to balance it out.
Is that what you did?
Yeah, I mean, there's... It's two different faucets.
It's two different faucets.
Yeah, so unless you want to, like, pull the drain and stick your hands in there and really mix it up, you're kind of going piping hot or freezing cold.
They're two different faucets.
They're two different faucets. Also, these are, like, the two... There's, like, one more modern press box bathroom, and there's just the two ones that have been there forever.
Yeah.
And they're right next to each other. And when I went into the old one, someone was using the one next to me, and when they flushed the toilet, the light in mine got dimmer.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, it did the thing where, like, you have, like, a power flicker.
Well, at least you weren't on an airplane when that happened.
Yeah, right?
I mean, that would... Yeah, I wouldn't like that.
Between that and the shaking in the press box, it's a very unnerving experience being up there. And adding to the unnerving feeling of this is when I walk in... I got in there probably, like, four or five hours prior to kickoff because they were showing the game in there, and I didn't want to be around a bunch of Penn State people tailgating. So it was like... And they have food up there. So I was like, might as well just, you know... Go up, find my seat, and
wow! You were like doing the early bird.
Yeah, I mean, like, what else is there to do? Unless you're tailgating.
Well, you could have hung out with our sponsor, Matt Demarest.
I could have done that, yes. But they were tailgating. Being around that's kind of not ideal.
No fun to not be able to drink.
So Michigan section of the press box, kind of just over in the far corner. And I'm literally in the front corner seat.
Okay.
And there's a stairwell next to us.
You're the vanguard of the media.
And I get down towards my seat and I see like the crew from the Wolverine is there.
Yeah.
And Ballas is just like, his hands are like, he's doing something. I can't tell until I get closer. He's just swatting away flies like crazy. And I look at my area and there's like three or four dead flies just in my little area in front of me.
Cubby.
And then I look at the stairwell and there are hundreds of them. Just hundreds of dead. Like, most of them are on like kind of the windowsill.
Yeah.
But there are hundreds of dead flies there. And like a few other random insects. Like, there was a ladybug that crawled up in front of me at one point and some other unidentifiable bug. Like, there was some serious wildlife up there.
Okay, so... Are we thinking this is some sort of dark ritual?
It felt
you can't put it past those people.
No, it felt foreboding at the time to look down and just be like, there is death here.
So some sort of death magic.
Like, I don't know what happened to these flies, but it might explain what happened to Don Brown.
Yeah. Wow, that's creepy. Well, if someone slightly dorkier than me can tell me what spell was used, we'll get on that.
Yeah, we'll
I'm not quite level 7 yet. I was going to say if someone dorky could... I was like, wait a minute, that's totally unfair. I accidentally bought two copies of the same, like, science fiction book. just like last week. Anyway, that'll be my next game column. The time I bought the same book twice.
We did, Eric Upchurch, our photographer, and I were driving over together, and we did actually come up with like the idea for what apparently would be the greatest business in that area of Pennsylvania, which is to open a car dealership that only sells white vehicles. Doesn't matter to make, they just have to be white. And then next to it, open up a store that only sells Penn State bumper stickers.
Okay.
And you will make an absolute killing because every other car we passed was a white car that had like 7 Penn State bumper stickers.
Do they
on
have
it.
Like a blue stripe running down the middle of the car? You need to like do that. That's needs to
surprisingly no. That's just, but there was one that had a big old 409 Forever decal on the back.
Well, he's happy today. Anyway, how long 12 minutes without talking about the game.
We're doing pretty well.
How can we get another like half hour and then just?
I mean, I can keep going on trailing through Pennsylvania.
All right.
We did have. I've got one more.
Okay, one more.
Which is, we were very pleased to see that we stayed in. I think it's probably pronounced Dubois because it's in Pennsylvania. It's probably not Dubois. Which is about an hour back west of Happy Valley.
Sure.
And we were extremely excited because Pennsylvania does not have many places that stay open late. We experienced this when we were there 4 years ago, yeah, and had to have a bar stay open after midnight to accommodate us to get a meal and a drink in. And I was just looking around our hotel before we made the trip, and there's this place called The Hitching Post that is a 24-hour restaurant and bar.
Ooh.
In Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Unfreaking believable. And not, yeah, in Pittsburgh or Philly. Like, this is like seeing a unicorn.
Yeah.
Then
what happened?
So we didn't make it there.
Was there
when we were coming back there from the game, we were just like, you know what? Like, we're just grabbing McDonald's and going to bed because it's late.
Gross.
But on the
you
way.
You know what? You shouldn't eat a McDonald's.
I mean.
You shouldn't eat a McDonald's until they have one ugly person in any of their commercials.
I feel you. It was not my first
just
call.
Just one ugly person.
The options of what's open.
Burger King has ugly people. They had Darius Rucker.
Burger King is not a 24-hour establishment in Pennsylvania.
Wendy's had like
not a 24-hour establishment in Pennsylvania.
And then the other Wendy before they got like fake hot Wendy. Mm. But
see, that's a reason to boycott Wendy's.
No,
right
there. But they've had ugly people.
They went.
Subway had Jared, which we won't.
Wendy's is like, we're going to pivot to a McDonald's advertising outlet. Like, that's not good.
Hey, but we managed to bring up Jared from Subway during a Penn State podcast.
that we did. Damn it.
And Norm MacDonald was the colonel. So
right.
Ugly people all over advertising. Never once in a McDonald's commercial.
Yeah. No, I feel you there. I just wish more things were open in Pennsylvania at night. But anyway, so we didn't go there at night because we figured they do 24/7 breakfast too. So we figured we'd go in the morning.
Okay.
We get up. We're like, all right, let's set up this place. See what it's about. Open the door. Sign on the front taped to it just says cash only. And it's like, damn it, this is so damn Pennsylvania. How do you not have a credit card reader in 2017? You can hook them up to your phone.
Did you
get a little square chip? We didn't go because we didn't have enough cash.
You didn't have enough cash.
So we ended up going to another McDonald's because there's nothing else
in
Pennsylvania.
You shouldn't go to McDonald's unless they have an ugly person. Did I say this?
You might have gone over this. But seriously, like when you drive back from there, you realize that unless you make like the one place that you exit that has... Because we didn't notice in time that we had passed an exit, and like right as we're going by, we're like, crap, that was a Denny's. And we knew that like we would not find anything else except for like run-of-the-mill fast food for the next,
sure,
2 hours. So McDonald's it was once we passed that exit.
Man, you're really, really just kind of layering it. Layers of sorrow. Anyway, football.
Yeah.
Speaking of layers of sorrow.
That was good segue.
I mean, Michigan acquires barely under 300 yards in this game. They have... two touchdowns. They turned the ball over twice.
That sounds right. How many times have I looked
once?
At the box score? Not
just
many.
Once. The sack strip on John O'Korn. That,
yes,
was pretty much the KD bar the door. Not KD bar the door. KD draw the curtains because the patient's dead. KD does a lot of things. And I didn't really expect much different.
No.
I was trying to write this up in the column, and I was just like, I don't have anything to say, so it was probably good that we spent 15 minutes on crap.
I mean, it's the same old thing. It's that, right, they're super limited because they can't trust their quarterback or their protection.
Yeah.
Penn State was at, like, their safeties were able to line up at, like, 8-9 yards and fire away. Jason Kabinda was sprinting forward at the snap pretty much every play.
Yeah. Yeah, Michigan's first like two drives, first three drives really, were extremely close to the vest.
Yeah.
And it was like, all right, we're just going to do what we did against Indiana and hope we can get in a 16-13 game.
And not against that defense. I mean,
they got 13.
That's true. But that was a strategy that capped you at about 13.
And then they got knocked out of that because their defense kept giving out points. And we saw improvement from John O'Korn.
Yeah, he had some like truly impressive throws in that game.
And he still averaged under 6 yards in attempts.
Yeah, there were also a lot of times where he just stood there and continued to stand there.
And there were 7 sacks, and I would say that those were probably split maybe 50-50 between the offensive line and O'Korn not being able to get rid of the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was kind of an all-around passing offense failure, because I can say from my vantage point in the press box, there were not many open receivers downfield, and they were also doing a poor job of working their way back when plays started breaking down.
Sure.
Like, there was that comical, like, O'Korn standing there for, like, legitimately 5 or 6 seconds in the pocket.
Yeah, I thought
that. And taking a sack. And there was, they ran, like, all deep routes, and nobody came back to the ball.
So, I mean, to me, like, there's a guy turning around as O'Korn gets contact, and he's got a window.
If you're asking O'Korn to anticipate, then we're in trouble here.
I mean, I am asking.
Yeah.
I saw...
We might be begging soon.
You know, John Doerr on Twitter was not a big fan of that call, and I'm like, I get that because you got to figure that John O'Korn is not going to be reading things particularly fast, but
yes.
I think as a concept, that's relatively sound, but when you have a guy who can't anticipate the fact that that guy's going to be open and have that ball out, so that's like halfway there when he turns.
This has to be a pretty brutal adjustment for Pep Hamilton going from Andrew Luck to John O'Korn and trying to adjust how he calls plays.
Yeah. And Penn State really, I mean, they really got in and exposed Juwan Bushel-Beatty's pass protection.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of got away with it against Indiana. He just had a couple minuses, but, you know, that game context was very different from this one.
Yeah.
And as soon as Michigan had to, like, open it up a little bit and stop just running, pass punt, he got worked. And I don't think anybody expected any different.
No, and Penn State's got some decent defensive ends that Sharif Miller dude can play.
Yeah, I was a little bit, like, disappointed. Like, I was like, well, maybe he could get a little bit better. But, like, no, it is what it is.
Yep.
As they like to say.
Might be a familiar refrain.
Yeah. I don't know what Michigan can do at this point because they just don't have a right tackle. And that is a major factor in the fact that they can't pass, and then the fact that they can't pass makes it so that they can't run.
Yeah, and also with that, when you have such serious pass protection issues, I'm sure that is factoring into the coaches deciding when is the right time to maybe mix Brandon Peters in, but it's hard to pull the trigger on that when you've got pressure coming in and just right in the quarterback's face on such a frequent basis. It's certainly not the environment you want to throw a redshirt freshman into. I still think they should do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do at least understand, especially like, you know, they had Peters warming up on the sideline late. I think Harbaugh said today that if that McSorley fumble had been upheld, Peters would have gone in. But that late in the game with the way the line was blocking in that situation, I was actually kind of fine seeing him not get thrown in there to take a couple hits late. There wasn't going to be much upside to that.
You know, at some point he's going to have to get in there and get hit because that's what.
Oh yeah,
that's what life is, man.
But hopefully it'll be like, you know, get hit once or twice by Rutgers instead of getting a dozen times by Penn State.
Yeah, and so O'Korn is still the starting quarterback. I think everybody expects that at some point we are going to see Brandon Peters in the Rutgers game.
Yeah,
and we'll see how it goes from there. you know, in terms of blaming. Pointing fingers, accountability, a lot of muttering. Like, you know, Jim Harbaugh has the kind of track record where I'm like, well, we're just going to let him do what he does. And I mean, I'm not particularly pleased with the way the season is going, but
no, certainly not. But
don't really see what all the yelling on the internet is going to accomplish.
No,
unlike with Brady Oak, yelling on the internet was very important.
Yeah, it made a big difference.
I can't tell if I'm serious. I mean, I'm kind of serious.
We yelled a lot online about the athletic director, and that did some things.
Yeah, yeah.
I would like to see, I mean, before even any thoughts of yelling come in, like I would like to see how they finish the season and also what he does with the coaching staff in the offseason, because it is a strangely configured offensive coaching staff.
Yeah,
and it seems like one that's ripe for change right now.
And it's hard to tell how much of the problem with the wide receivers is the fact that they have a grad assistant who's doing the bulk of the actual
wide
receiver coaching.
Yeah, there is not a dedicated wide receivers coach right now.
And how much of it is just like they don't have anybody who's...
Yeah, I mean, you're working with a bunch of freshmen and quarterbacks who have a tough time getting the ball. And
well, Perry's the only guy who's an upperclassman, and he looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, if O'Korn would be a smidge more accurate on his passes, like he'd be coming off like a couple of really good back-to-back weeks.
Yeah.
So is the fact that they aren't getting much production from anybody else just freshman wide receivers suck, or is it actually a real problem?
Seems like a bit of both, given the way it's gone so far this year.
I mean, sure.
But I'd say the quarterback is the bigger issue than the receivers right now.
Well, I mean, in this game, they did kind of help out a little bit. Crawford had a nice catch.
He did.
Set up
that was an impressive tracking of the ball.
I don't remember any heinous drops. I don't really remember very much in detail.
What were you doing during the game, Brian?
I was watching it.
Okay.
But it just kind of slipped out of my memory.
Yeah, I don't blame you. There are some games from like 2014 that felt like that immediately afterwards, where it's just like, I'm pretty sure I just watched a football game, but
well,
it didn't stick.
You know, yeah, they're down like 35-13, and I'm like, how did this happen? I don't remember. And that's probably for the best.
Yeah, but that might be healthy.
I mean, I could repeat all the stuff we've said on the previous podcast about the offense.
It just feels pointless. I mean,
yeah, it's like, yeah, you guys know. I mean, everybody knows what we're looking at. And the only thing to do is to keep coaching and try to get better next year. Because Michigan lost, what, 7 starters, and then they lost their top quarterback, and that turned out to be a very big deal, even though we thought it wasn't at the time.
Mm-hmm. Losing their top wideout turned out to be
whiteout.
A pretty darn big deal, too.
And they don't have their top left tackle.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's 3 pretty important spots right there.
Yeah.
That are not filled.
And, I mean, people, whenever
a lot of youth at other spots, and, you know.
Whenever this happens, people are like, you're making excuses. And I'm like, well, it's another word for reason.
Yeah, you know.
A reason.
You know.
So, you know, people get mad. I just don't
see the purpose in getting worked up about a bunch of numbers on a page when you have...
Whoa. That is very off-brand.
Sorry.
That is terribly off-brand.
No, I mean for like, you know, like Michigan's averaging this many yards in this game.
Sure,
it's like, yeah. Well, you know, yeah, I get that. And, you know, or like the numbers, like the rival record. And,
right.
You know, it's like, well, there's a context here. And it's or like, you know, freaking, you know, Tom Lee from ESPN, like, you know, the outside the lines dude is like tweeting the like Brady Hoke and Jim Harbaugh graphic where they have the same record through this many games. It's like, man... Context is really important for that one. Come on. Like, whoever whipped up that graphic, screw you, guy.
Well, I mean, it's just going to be like this until Harbaugh gets his team together.
Yeah, we're going to have good. Stupid tweets from Jason McIntyre suggesting the NFL is going to be more interested in Harbaugh because he is losing this game badly.
I mean, about like 30% of my desire to see Michigan win is just for all the stupid takes to stop happening.
Oh, yeah.
Just,
yeah.
Just like people... mouthing off.
Like, mentions.
And I'm just like, please stop talking.
Yeah. I checked my mute list. It's up over 700 now.
I got that beat.
I'm impressed.
I
only have one mute term, but I have like 750 mute people.
What's the term?
Rudock spelled with 2 D's. That's a holdover from 2015, and I'm keeping it forever.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right, we're just talking about the other side of the ball now. I can't call it defense. Oh, that's not fair.
Ooh.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team. Yeah.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, and MLS number 1161358.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there. All your secrets stay safe, all your liars will lay, all your stories are stains on that mattress. All your secrets stay safe, all your liars will lay, all your stories are stains on that mattress. Ain't no way to ignore yourself, a lot to say with no one to tell. We all think you so cool, cause nobody knows that nobody knows you. Paintbrush, cover up them flaws, breakups and the broken laws. You can't share all the facts with a homemade crosshair on your back. Everybody wanna tell the tale, like the chips might fall, but they never fail.
Alright, so Don Brown got eviscerated in this one, and I know what he's thinking. And he's thinking is like, alright, I watch these other games, these people are playing soft zone coverage, they're just keeping everything in front of them, and they're still losing because Penn State is eventually putting up points.
Yeah,
and I don't know if I have the margin to do that. Yeah. Also, I'm Don Brown, so I'm going to do the Don Brown things.
Yeah, he solves his problems with aggression. We know that quite well.
And if you're looking for a silver lining for this game, it's Joe Moorhead is not going to be at Penn State next year, because Joe Moorhead is going to be a head coach.
From your lips to God's ears.
I mean, like, once you get past like Scott Frost...
That's true.
Like who?
Yeah, and man, Moorhead is damn good at this.
Yeah, so there's going to be jobs open, and some of those jobs are going to be like, hey, you come work for us.
Yeah,
I think Central Florida is going to be a strong candidate there because they had a couple good years. He can make something, and then go be a dude.
That's a good place to go run a wide open fun offense too. Yeah.
So he really took it to Michigan, and then some of it was just like pretty much everything they threw was dead on point. Like
McSorley had a heck of a
McSorley
game.
McSorley played out of his mind.
Yeah, because they were like, people were, myself included, were down on the safeties, especially in the first half, because they, you know, a couple bad run fits in there. But there were some throws made against them where people complaining about like Metellus getting hit on a corner route against Hamilton. It's like, man, like that throw made in that situation is literally unguardable unless you're 8 feet tall.
Yeah, there was a guy who's like, why isn't there a quarterback on that guy? I'm like, if Charles Woodson himself was covering that throw, it's still a completion.
Mm-hmm.
And like Cannell got hit with one where, yeah, he could have played that better. Like he could have done the Shoryuken technique that I described on the blog yay so many years ago.
But when like Mike Gesicki's high pointing a ball that's like left short where he's able to just go rebound, unless you have a basketball center hanging out at safety, that's tough.
And then after that happens, they start hitting slants mm-hmm. on these guys who are like freaking out about these corner
rounds. Yeah, because they've softened them up a little bit, and now like Cannell gets hit on a slant by Hamilton that goes for 25 or so.
It all looks very, very pretty when everything is working.
Yeah, when it happens to somebody else.
Well, no, like
I know what you mean. You know,
the point I'm trying to make is that like the corner routes that were perfectly thrown set up easier stuff for Penn State
because yes.
Michigan was freaking out about that. So, I mean, I thought the cornerbacks all did exactly what they could. Like, you know, yeah. Hill had a couple of nice pass defenses. Long had an interception.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a lot that hit on Hill or Long, at least,
or
Watson.
It was all Deshaun Hamilton in the slot and then Gesicki.
On that chuck downfield, yeah. And then a bunch of underneath stuff for the most part. Or you know, the thing we'll talk about with, you know, Barkley.
Right, well, I was just talking about the pass game.
Yeah, well, he was involved in that too.
Oh, God, yeah.
we do need to address that.
Yeah.
That would be the elephant in the room.
Like, you'd think that after watching Dalvin Cook against Mike McCray on that exact same route.
That you'd go, let's never have that happen again.
Let's not do that.
And then they got away with playing with fire twice because they had the Barkley wheel route that he just flat out drops.
Yeah, and that's more on McCray. I mean, like, McCray can't cover that route, but his angles on wheel routes are always terrible.
And then they ran just a quick, like, 4-yard out with him that he got, like, 3 yards of separation against McCray on, and then he slipped when he was turning upfield, or he would have had another 20 yards.
Yeah, I don't...
And then they still have that matchup on the 48-yard touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, this has been consistently, like, the one thing that I'm like, what you do?
Especially since, like, I haven't gone back through the game tape because to hell with that. But
we're a professional.
If memory serves, I believe Khalik Hudson was rushing the passer on at least two of those plays. And it's just like, well, like I get that you like Hudson as a blitzer, but McCray's a good blitzer.
Yeah.
And Hudson can actually kind of stay in the same athletic realm as Saquon Barkley. So why are those guys in those respective positions on those plays? I don't get it.
Yeah, I
it's the one thing with Don Brown that I do not understand. Everything else has been superlative.
No, because I mean, one of the whole points of like having that box safety is that you've got five defensive backs on the field.
Yeah, you've got some moving pieces, and you can match up with anybody.
Yeah, why are you using one as a linebacker and a linebacker as a cornerback? I mean, that happened in the Michigan State game with Devin Bush, where he was lined up like 8 yards off. It was a wide receiver.
Yeah,
he was like 8 yards off Ryzen, and they got like a cheap 12 yards off that. And I was like, why are we doing this?
Yeah, some of their matchup stuff has been pretty weird. And then it was a little annoying seeing Penn State when Michigan did similar stuff where they'd empty the backfield and put a back out there. They just played zone.
Yeah, and Michigan can play zone, and maybe they should play zone.
You know, in those situations, especially if you're playing against a guy like Saquon Barkley, which thankfully will never happen again.
No, well... Maybe someone like him, not him exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that, the clearest RPS minus 3 in the history of MGO Blog. At least since the last one, that might be RPS minus 4. It happens twice.
Yeah, it seems like once you've already nearly been burned badly by it twice, maybe.
And that was kind of the story of Penn State's offense like last year, is that all they had was that matchup.
Yeah, and they were just, you know, scheming up a zillion ways to finally get Barkley on the wrong guy. And they're good at that now. I mean, especially the way they were using motion pre-snap and breaking out stuff that they hadn't shown all year.
Yeah,
this did not look like the Penn State offense from any of the games I've watched so far. I mean, or at least it looked like it initially, and then they did different stuff out of it and broke out new wrinkles. I mean, Barkley shifting over to quarterback was a very new thing. The way they motioned into the backfield out of empty sets to have him coming back one way and then showing outside zone look the other way, they hadn't done that before. There was a lot that they were able to save for this game.
Yeah, there were a lot of plays where, you know, they have some play action to Barkley and the entire defense is like, oh crap, we gotta go get him, and then like McSorley is popping out the other end and there's just nobody past the defensive line.
Now, if I'm a Penn State fan, which is a horrible thing to say, I'm feeling they didn't do it. Yeah, I'm feeling a lot better about the Iowa game because it's like, oh, we didn't use half our offense.
No, I mean they racked up like out.
Well, yeah, and they put up a huge number in that game too. It was just a couple turnovers, but like still, like you know, the optics of that game were tremendous. But
well, they had
and they should feel better about the Indiana Northwestern games.
Yeah, those are the games that like I was like, all right. maybe these guys just can't block and Barkley is going to be contained. And it was just like, nope, rope-a-dope.
But I'm assuming like the moment Saquon Barkley returned that opening kickoff against Indiana for a touchdown, Moorhead probably started cackling and like put away a playbook.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't had a game that was close enough to break into the good stuff since.
No, I was the only one.
Yeah, so... And that's luxury that they have because they have a good offense.
Yes.
We saw Michigan against Indiana. They broke out a counter and they got a touchdown off of it. And that's something that Penn State didn't have to do against Indiana.
Yeah. So and then, all that and stuff then Michigan does not have that play in their back pocket against Penn State. And they're not able to break a run.
So you can only install so much stuff and Penn State got to dump it all on Michigan. Maybe not all of it.
It felt like all of it.
It did feel like all of it.
It really did. But
so we should mention the wildcat. It's not really a wildcat because it's
just them swapping spots.
Yeah, it's much less dumb than the wildcat.
Yeah,
which has like Jay Cutler smoking a cigarette at the bottom of the screen.
that was a wonderful gif.
They wanted to run inverted veer. They wanted to run power read, and they wanted Saquon Barkley to be the guy who is the guy who gets the ball by default.
Yeah, the main dude.
That was a real good idea.
That was very smart.
But Michigan actually did a pretty good job of stuffing it up after the first time, and the problem on the first time was not the point of attack. It was a cutback, and that cutback was largely there because Rashawn Gary
fires a little bit too far upfield.
I will remind you, is a true sophomore, reacted to second and four like it was third and 20.
Yeah.
He's gone upfield, and there's just this vast cutback lane. Part of that is Winovich is trying to fight to the point of attack as well, but there's just nobody who's even peeling back to slow Barkley down.
Yeah.
And once he breaks through the line of scrimmage and he doesn't get slowed down immediately, he's gone.
Yeah. It's like Metellus took a bad angle there, and it's like, yeah, but...
What was going to happen?
Yeah, like, really, in that situation, you just guess and go all out for it and pray, because that's your best hope, is just to catch him by surprise.
And then, you know, the rest of the day, they did a decent job of containing that particular wrinkle until it was time to give it to McSorley, like, in the second quarter, and
yeah,
he just popped out for an easy touchdown. I mean, that's the luxury of having a guy like Barkley, is that you overreact to him.
And because that's the sane thing to do.
Right, yeah, and nobody on Michigan is worthy of overreacting to.
No.
So that's Michigan's priority, is like have someone worth overreacting to.
Get a dude.
And they haven't been able to do that. They haven't been able to do that large part because their offensive line and the sophomore recruiting class is kind of looking like not as much of a hit. Like, I like Eddie McDoom in his role.
Yeah.
But he's not... He's got a role, right? He's not.
Yeah, he's a limited player.
And until this game, Crawford had been hadn't contributed anything that was positive, really, except some pretty basic plays. So, you got to get Donovan Peoples-Jones back up and running. Hopefully, Tariq Black can come back. I imagine that he's shut down for the season because they played Nico Collins.
Yes.
Which, on a screen,
it was surprising.
That was
to see
not
him.
To him.
It was weird to see him out there and then have them just dial up run plays because it felt, or a screen play because it's like a.
You might as well have the guy run a route at least.
What's the point?
So,
I assume he'll be in for a bigger role these next few weeks.
Yeah,
otherwise that was really pointless.
I mean, I assume that he's going to get some at bats here because, I mean,
they want to see what they have. I mean, they're trotting out, you know, Shane Lee. You know, there's opportunities for guys to break through at receiver.
Yeah, and they need someone to establish themselves in the second half of the season so they can have some confidence in that unit going forward.
Yeah, I assume part of the motivation for that is looking at what they currently have out there and going, we can upgrade, and let's get a head start on that.
Do we have anything else about the defense? No, not really.
Nah. I don't think so.
The Devin Bush Barkley Thunderdome didn't really happen.
No, he did have an impressive chase down of Barkley on one play, sideline to sideline.
They split a couple of reps. Like, he got juked for about 9 yards, and I was just like, oh, that's nasty.
Yeah.
And then he manages to track Barkley down on a play that looked like it was going to be a big gain.
One thing we should bring up is that Winovich took that personal foul early on, and then first of all,
that would have been like second and 29.
That was a real bad thing to do. And then the coaches seemed to agree because they were rotating in Quiddy Paye and Ruben Jones.
I think it's Pay. It's Pay. That's what the announcers are doing. You're the enunciator.
I thought it was Paye. Well, I think the announcers are wrong. But
okay, that's we'll fine. See. We'll have a Thunderdome about that.
Yeah, I can look up the pronunciation guide in a minute.
Yeah, he had a sack and he had like a free run, but he converted it.
Yeah. But then unfortunately later in the game, Winovich went to the locker room for a little bit. He did get back out there, but they said today that they're kind of monitoring like a banged up knee situation going forward. So that's something unfortunately we got to keep an eye on.
I can't imagine it's serious or they wouldn't have put him out in a game that was pretty much already done.
Yeah, although Winovich is kind of like the Iron Man type who would play through something that might maybe shouldn't play through. Like he's played every snap in a couple games this year.
I know, but like it can't be that bad.
Right? Yeah, I mean obviously he's not walking around on like a torn ligament or something like that.
Right.
But it is that was a notable thing.
Time to start recruiting Shea Patterson, by the way. He's out for the year with a PCL tear.
All right.
So now it's like, hey, Shea.
What's going on, buddy?
How you doing? We'll hire your brother. We don't care.
We'll hire your whole fam.
Oh, moment of levity.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley. So did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
If you've got a cold room or you're feeling drafts in your house, you probably want to take care of that before winter. Here's what you've got to do. Call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of your issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer 0% financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call 248-291-7815. Or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
I'm trying to keep my faith.
We on an ultralight beam. We on an ultralight beam. This is a God dream. This is a God dream. This is everything. This is everything. Deliver us serenity. Deliver us peace. Deliver us love. We know we need it.
Look, I know people that you're probably thinking, maybe I should eat some kittens. Maybe after this evisceration by Penn State that Maybe I don't want kittens to grow up to be lions. Well, you gotta stay strong. And eat the only kitten-free hummus on the market, which is Lantana hummus. They have a cucumber hummus, which is made with white beans and edamame and topped with cucumber and dill. Sounds good with lox. Possibly some goat cheese.
Yeah.
On a cracker. Check out all their flavors at LantanaFoods.com and find Lantana hummus at Bush's, Kroger, Meijer, or check your local grocer. All right, time for Ace's Hockey Podcast. How you doing, Ace?
Doing well, Brian. How are you?
See, you've already blown it. Ace would have just like gone, and then looked at me. See, you're being too professional.
I'm looking at you.
And not visual enough.
I can look away.
This is Dave Nasternak, who's in the press box for us at Hockey and charting all of the Corsi items that are there to be charted. So we thought we would bring him in instead of Ace, who's completely useless about hockey. He's sitting right here, and he's nodding.
It was his idea.
It was my idea.
Okay.
Because I was like, hey, Ace, stop being useless. And he's like, I can't. In this one regard. So Michigan has a sweep over Vermont this weekend. And Vermont was, I think, 17th in pairwise last year.
Yes, last year.
They lost four of their top seven?
Four or five of their top seven scorers, yeah.
And so they're not quite the same team, but this is a team that probably expects to be in the middle of the pack in Hockey East.
They generally have been over the past five, seven years or so.
And for a Michigan team that struggled last year to get a sweep, and a sweep that was more convincing than not, I think is a big step forward for them. So the Friday night game was a complete obliteration that was like 0-0 midway through, and then Michigan kind of gets into it. I mean, they were into it the whole game, but they actually get some goals and get out of there with a 4-1 win. The Saturday game was much closer, both in terms of score and game situation and Corsi, but Michigan does come from behind in the third period to get two goals and get that W and get out of there, which is, I thought it was fortunate.
Yeah.
I mean, the two goals that they get from Slaker in the third were not awesome opportunities. They were decent opportunities, and there wasn't a whole lot of like grade A chances that they had in that whole game.
No, they had a couple of looks, I think, on Saturday, but not nearly as many as they had on Friday. And they probably could have had seven goals or so on Friday, I thought.
Yeah, you said they had, how many of their shot attempts were from the home plate circle?
So they
home plate
they
circle.
Had
trapezoid. Is it trapezoid?
I called it,
it's a pentagram, whatever. Not a pentagram. Pentagon. Pentagram is not.
I called it home plate last year because that's what it looks like.
It looks like home plate, yeah.
But you can cut those syllables in half if you just call it the house, which is what I've heard other people calling it.
The house.
So I figured that's a better way to go.
Shoot from the house. I like it.
Yeah. Well, they had 72 total attempts on Friday, which might be more than they had in any game last year.
Right.
Off the top of my head. There are not many more than they had more than that. Anyway, they had 24 of those came from the house. And 27, and 24 came from, like, the bottom half of it. So they're getting really close to the crease.
Okay.
They're getting really near the net when they're getting these shots.
And they were pretty sluggish in the Saturday game for whatever reason for about the first half of it, it felt. That was a pretty even matchup on Saturday, and it was a total blowout on Friday.
Their goalie kind of gave up a couple of goofy ones on Saturday, and I think if he holds his post on both of those, I think that Vermont probably wins.
Yeah, but, and there was a wraparound goal on Saturday, which is not something that you see very often.
Yeah, we were watching with our buddy Anthony, who plays goalie, and he just lost it. He was like, a goalie can't do that.
He loses it at everything.
Well.
He's a very violent man.
It's neither here nor there.
He also listens to this podcast, and he's definitely going to yell at me about that. Anthony is not violent unless you drive on his lawn with tacos.
That is true.
Anyway, so this is a team that, you know, kind of looks like I was hoping it was going to look. You know, they don't have a lot of skill. They don't have the ability to outscore people, but they gave up one goal and then two goals, and I think that was a fair representation of their weekend, where, you know, Vermont didn't really have much.
No, I don't think, at least to start, Vermont has a whole lot of offensive firepower so far.
Right.
But the defense, I thought, from the naked eye, looked better. They seem to close down shooters pretty well. They seem to keep the shots from a distance for the most part. And they were able to more consistently get the puck out of the zone.
Yeah, and you don't see the kind of, like, three or four odd man breaks a period stuff that we were seeing last year.
No, I only counted two on Friday. And Saturday was tougher just because of the camera angles that we had. but they seem to be a lot more defensively sound in many different ways, which is not unexpected, I don't think, from what we were hoping would happen this year, given the coaching switching and getting a better defenseman in as sort of their marquee defenseman too.
Yeah, and I looked back at the shot counts for the game they lost 3-0 to St. Lawrence
Clarkson, yeah,
and they actually outshot 29-19. So far this season, they've had a complete turnaround from what they were doing last season, just in terms of possession numbers, whether they're shots or Corsi.
And Clarkson, I think, is a decent team. I think they beat Penn State, if I'm not mistaken, this year too. So it's not like they Michigan went in and laid an egg. And no, they might actually be a decent squad.
And they outpossess those guys,
right?
So.
Right. And we made a big deal of this last year, right, with when they got Mel, is that he's turned around Tech in terms of winning, but also in Corsi and keeping the puck. And that has held true so far through the first four games.
And he did it instantly at Tech. So they were like a 6-win team, and they went to a 16-win team. So
right.
Something similar at Michigan might put them on the bubble. And so far, so good.
It'll be interesting, I think, this weekend, because they go to Penn State. And Penn State the last year has just destroyed them. In Corsi.
That's true.
And I think their coach has made it a point to take a lot of shots from pretty much anywhere on the ice, and it'll be an interesting matchup because Michigan had a lot of that too. They not only did they get into the house a lot, but they also ripped a ton from near the blue line.
Yeah, there were a ton of shots from the defensemen at the points.
Right.
And sometimes it's a lack of creativity, but like when you don't have guys who can do a lot with the puck and just throwing it at the net and hopefully they can get a deflection is not the worst idea in the world.
No, and that'll be that's why I think this weekend will be interesting, because that's exactly what Penn State wants to do, and it'll be interesting to see how they match up against a team that wants to do the same thing.
Individual player takes are a little bit difficult just because you only get about 15 to 20 minutes of a guy per game and you're not always looking at him. But early in the season there are a couple of guys who kind of leap out. Will Lockwood is one of them. Lockwood is super fast, and he's really turning that into attempts and shots and defense, and he's a guy who I would be comfortable with on a Michigan top line at any point.
Yeah, I think I retweeted his first goal, but there's a video of it where he pokes the puck away from a defenseman along the boards, beats him to it about the center line, and then skates in and then beats the goalie, and that's, I mean, I was thinking Ovechkin all the way through that. But
well, I mean, Lockwood kind of represents what I think Mel is going for. So you're seeing the Ruse kid they brought in from Colorado College played both games. Dakota Rabe?
Rabe, I think it was.
Rabe also played. And both those guys, they don't do much that's obvious to me yet. But one thing they both do is they both skate. Like they can fly.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of what happened Friday is that, you know, Vermont just walked in and they were just unprepared for the fact that Michigan was all over them.
Yeah, and I think they were bailed out by their goalies the first half of the game.
Yeah.
But Warren's goal was the second goal, and it came late in the second period. And he's probably not the best, most talented player Michigan has, but he pretty much skated from the corner to the middle of the slot and just took a shot and scored. And he went by about two or three guys that just kind of flailed their sticks at him. And I just was like, they looked dead. I mean, Vermont just looked dead by about half to two-thirds the way through the game.
Yep. So that's how they're going to have to do it. They're going to have to forecheck. They're going to have to get a lot of turnovers. They're going to have to get that tilted ice Corsi going and hope that enough goals go in. Good start. We'll see.
Yeah, and I think the best thing is we haven't even mentioned the goaltending yet, which has been solid throughout the year, but we haven't really had to. And I think that's the thing where anytime we would talk about hockey last year, it was like, oh, man, what a game from Nagelvoort. What a game from LaFontaine to keep us in this.
Because they were getting 50 shots.
Yeah, now, you know, LaFontaine had eliminated at some point during the game on Friday. So
yeah. So that's nice. Quinn Hughes also kind of jumps out because he's a 5'9 defenseman who might go to the top 10 of the draft. Clearly trying to do too much right now.
A little bit.
But really exciting player, really fun player. There was a power play on Friday that he just had the puck for maybe 15 seconds and threw a no-look pass across the slot that should have been converted, but the guy couldn't get the one-timer out. And I was just like, and there's just one pass every game, and you're just like, God damn, dude. You are awesome.
The best part is I think he did a spin move right before it.
Yes.
And so he just did this twirl and then threw a pass across the ice in Lockwood. It hit him in the stick, and he was probably just shocked that the puck got there, or he was not expecting to get it. And
keep your head on a swivel when Quinn Hughes is out there.
Absolutely.
He'll settle down and he'll realize that in college he can't get away with quite as much stuff, but his talent is as elite as it looks like. And Josh Norris, physically dominant, maybe not the most skilled guy in the world, but does remind me a little bit of Carl Hagelin, where he's just big, strong, fast, and that will turn into goals eventually.
Yeah, and he got free a few times. He scored a couple on Friday and definitely got away from some people too. So
yeah, breakaway, he got a penalty shot.
Yes.
And it was kind of lame.
Yeah, it came in really slow and just kind of tried to take a snipe from a little too high up, I thought. But
so not a guy who's a puck wizard who's going to stick handle by you, but someone who I think is a pretty good bet for 20 goals. Maybe next year, maybe not.
Maybe
this year.
It'll be interesting to see him play with Lockwood, I think.
I mean, with Lockwood and Norris really kind of coming on, I'm almost content with the top line. And it's just that the scoring depth, I don't know if they've got it.
No, I wouldn't think that they would. I mean, if you put Calderon out there with those two, you might have three different types of players, and then you might formulate one line.
Yeah.
But beyond that, by the time you get to the third line, it's just kind of some guys.
All right, thanks, Ace. You were uncommonly informed about the hockey team this week.
Oh, thank you. I will get it back to Dave after this.
All right, let's call Jamie.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves. This is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
But I've been stealing time, thinking if I try, everything will turn out right. We're caught up in the climb, love was far behind. Someone's gotta stop this madness. When all
we welcome in Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing all right, guys. I'm just slowly recovering from a weekend that saw 9 of the 12 Big Ten teams that played average only 4.7 yards per play or less on offense. one of the three teams that did better than that found a way to lose to Rutgers.
Big Ten. I'm looking at these sheets here, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 of the 10 teams didn't get to 300 yards of total offense.
Wow.
So, yeah. Michigan, of course.
There were only three Big Ten teams to crack 20 points last week.
Also, Northwestern and Iowa barely got over that mark. It was like...
And they played an overtime game.
There were like three functional offenses in the Big Ten. We got to play one.
Hooray.
Hooray. All right, let's start off with... God. Let's start off with Northwestern 10, Indiana... No, wait. That's not... They didn't even play this week.
No.
Northwestern 17, Iowa 10.
And what does it really matter?
A rock fight that Northwestern wins in overtime. Both teams barely crest 300. I mean, it was just a hideous outing.
Now we cut and paste this for the rest of the segment. And we're good to go.
I mean, Akram Wadley can't do anything. That's
depressing.
It is depressing. I mean, that guy's got mad talent, and he's a mad talent. Well, 1997. And he's got 3.5 yards of carry against Northwestern, a team that got their ass handed to them by Duke.
We've come back to that a lot this year.
In September. Yeah.
Duke.
Yeah, I mean that's really one of the themes of this game was the continued demise of Wadley. You mentioned his stat line for the game: 26 carries, 90 yards. A year ago, he averaged 6.4 yards per carry and was fifth in the Big Ten. This year, they've rounded up, so he's got 4.0 yards per carry right now, but he's really at 3.5. He's 21st in the league in yards per carry. If you want an advanced metric, last year he had 6.3 highlight yards per opportunity. This year, he's down to 4.5. This guy's got serious wiggle. He makes people miss, and it's just not happening this year. Plus, he's carrying the ball a ton more. He was 13 to 15 carries a game last year, and he's been over 17 carries in 6 of the 7 starts with 4 games of 23 carries or more. We've said all year they need to find guys to help him out, and right now his legs aren't doing anything.
No, and, they hit Vandenberg for like a 62-yard pass that sets up some sort of score. I forget what kind of score. And that's,
it set up a touchdown. It would have been scoreless at halftime if not for that.
Oh, that's
that was right before half. Yeah,
that's right. And on like 32 other attempts, Stanley has 150 yards. And that's like, is John O'Korn better than many quarterbacks in the Big Ten? How many quarterbacks? How many teams does John O'Korn start for? I got at least 4.
Well, let's see. I think Minnesota, Illinois, Rutgers, although their new quarterback is suddenly undefeated.
Big Ten.
I take him on Indiana over Peyton Ramsey.
Wow.
What?
I don't think I'd do that.
Clearly, that's 5.
Bortenschlager?
He's got to be better than
Bortenschlager. How do you feel about Bortenschlager?
He's got to be better than Bortenschlager.
Have we talked about Demaryius Croft?
Is John O'Korn an above-average Big Ten quarterback?
Have we put Northwestern on this list yet? Are we starting him over Thorson? Are we starting him over Rivals preseason number one quarterback?
No,
we're not going that far.
Yeah, well, the two quarterbacks in this game, Stanley and Thorson, I mean, you know, that's a toss-up between him and O'Korn. I think some of the ones we listed,
Stanley was like a yard and a half better per attempt than Thorson in this game.
Yes, I mean, yeah. I would take Stanley over O'Korn.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question. Like,
yeah, I think I would, too. He seems to at least have the arm.
God, this conversation. Big Ten!
Yeah.
It's more like, Michigan.
Yeah.
No, because he's better than these guys, so that's a Big Ten.
Okay, fair enough. But then we just decided he wasn't better than one of them.
Well, yeah, just one of them, but
yeah.
I'm taking him over Demaryius Croft.
Hey,
speaking of Demaryius Croft.
Let's go.
Minnesota wins a football game in which their quarterback throws for 3.1 yards an attempt.
Yeah.
5 of 15 for 47 yards.
That sounds
and
kind
two
of familiar.
Picks. Yeah. It does sound familiar.
We could just probably make up stats for this game. I don't think anybody watched.
I actually saw part of it.
Why?
Did you?
Because we're playing Minnesota. I was like, all right, I got to watch part of this.
Hey, you're doing my job.
It's like flipping between the Michigan State game.
Yeah. We've come a long way this season. A couple of weeks ago, Brian forgot that Michigan played Minnesota, and now he's watching Minnesota play. What did my notes say? They played Illinois. Now he's watching the Minnesota-Illinois game.
Minnesota throwing for a whopping 47 yards in this game.
Oh,
and,
wow,
and winning.
Yeah.
And winning.
I mean, against Illinois.
And winning.
Yeah, but,
I mean, yeah.
Mm.
I don't feel much intimidation factor.
There was. I don't know if I'm going to get this exactly right because it's a tweet I'm not going to bother scrolling back to look up, but there was something that came across yesterday during the Illinois-Minnesota game where I think something they've had something like 7 straight offensive touchdowns. It might even be 9 scored by true freshmen, and something like 11 of their 13 touchdowns this season on offense have been scored by true freshmen.
Minnesota or Illinois?
Illinois. Wow.
Illinois is starting like...
Yeah, and I mean, it's Epstein, and then he got hurt, and it's Ricky Smalling, and it's all true freshmen. It's crazy. And Jeff George Jr.
They actually put in a new guy. They burned some guy's red shirt in the
second half of this game. Cam Thomas. He threw a pick on 4 attempts.
Rushed for 79 yards, though.
Hey, that's something.
Wow. Got a touchdown out of it. I follow like maybe 2 Illinois guys on Twitter, and I know way too much about it. I don't follow any Minnesota guys, because why would anybody do that? But I got my Illinois guys. So I know everything about the program.
Whatever happened, though, to the mediocre bowl blog guy from Minnesota? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
What happened to him?
The French poll guy? I think he...
Did he get absorbed by SB Nation or something? Because he was usually an entertaining follow on Twitter.
He was good. But, like... I mean, you can't be surprised when like a Minnesota blogger is like, no, I'm going to spend time with anybody else doing anything else.
I have a family now.
Well, the Gophers might have a good basketball team this winter. We might need to find some Gopher bloggers to follow.
Yeah. Anyway, do we have anything about this game that we should say?
No.
No. Okay. Moving on.
Not really.
To the crime against football of, one of the many crimes against football of the week. Rutgers 14, Purdue 12. Rutgers has 217 total yards. Purdue has 474, and they lose this game. I mean, Rutgers had 8 first downs. That's not many more first downs than Rutgers had against Michigan last year.
No. They probably got a couple earlier in the game, at least.
Probably, yes.
Yeah, the first down edge was 25-8 for Purdue, and Purdue ran 89 plays to Rutgers 55. But Rutgers scored a 74-yard touchdown run on their second offensive snap of the game, and that lead almost held up. They eventually added to it before Purdue really cut into it. But Purdue's problem was, one, field position. You know, Rutgers won the field position battle pretty significantly, and 9 of Purdue's 14 drives started at the 20 or inside their own 20. And then they would move the ball pretty well, but then they would constantly fail on third down. They were 3 for 15 on third down, 1 for 4 on fourth down. They went the whole second and third quarters and well into the fourth quarter without converting a third down. And it just was just a couple drop passes, some inaccurate throws. One of the fourth downs they went for was like the worst ever quarterback draw. They ran a double reverse pass on the 9-yard line on third and goal after a false start had pushed them back. They kept driving the ball 30, 40, or 50 yards out of bad field position and then just eventually stalling when they faced a third down. A couple of typical drives in this game were, you know, Purdue had an eight-play 60-yard drive that started at the 10-yard line that stalled out on a turnover on downs, and then they had an eight-play 50-yard drive earlier in the game that did the same thing. They just couldn't convert on the money downs. And, you know, I mean, sometimes situational football is kind of overrated when the pundits talk about it. But when you are really, really bad at situational football for a game, it's just going to cost you. And that's what happened here.
Purdue even managed to get they ran the fake flea flicker that they did in the spring game, and it worked, and they still didn't win.
Yeah.
Against Rutgers.
Well, they dominated rushing the football. You know, the trio of Knox, Jones, and Worship, 31 carries, 203 yards. You know, and it just too often after they let them move them down the field, they would just try throwing on second and third down. It'd be incomplete drop or drop incomplete, you know, punt.
All right, let's move on to this is the crimier crime against football of the week. It's Michigan State 17, Indiana 9, and the crime against football is Mike DeBoard.
Oh my God. Three straight inside zones, right?
They have first down from the 11, and Indiana is moving the ball temporarily, and they run inside zone 3 straight times and then punt on 4th and 2. And there was some other, the back-to-back quarterback draws.
That back-to-back quarterback draws came after.
That wasn't the first time he's had that sequence of play calls this year.
And they had first down at the state's 15-yard line after a fumble. And, those back-to-back draws were – poorly executed and also just pretty predictable.
And then they threw a fade to someone not named Simi Cobbs on the third down ensuing from those 2 zero-yard quarterback draws.
I mean... You know, instead of talking about another frustrating Indiana football loss and their crappy offense wasting the only good defense the program's had since I've been a fan, can we just talk about Mo Wagner running over Tom Crean again? Probably, it's been a while. It's been a while since any of us talked about that.
Related, there were a lot of Indiana people blocking about the like basketball scrimmage that was going on. Like pretty much as soon as this game was over, you could tell basketball season's here because all the Indiana football people just bailed.
I mean, this was 9-3 Indiana until Michigan State puts like a touchdown drive together, and then Michigan State has a 4-minute drill that ends up in the end zone because Indiana lets them score, and then. Nothing happens on the ensuing drive, and it's just, I mean, the
State converted a 3rd and 9 on that drive to put him like at the Indiana 15, and then, Indiana just let him score at that point.
So the Crimson Quarry guy tweeted out that he found it deeply hilarious that Michigan State, Michigan, and Indiana were all the same team this year, and I was like, my mind was blown. It was a galaxy brain. They're all the same team.
That's not fun.
Even like the slightly runny quarterback who's not really a running quarterback.
Good defense
is completely inept on offense.
Running backs just seem like they could be good if they actually got some blocking.
Oh, LJ Scott had a 7-play suspension.
One for each
arrest. So don't ever let it be said that Mark D'Antonio is soft on crime. Because he's not even soft on crime. He's ephemeral.
That was great, wasn't it, that he came in on their 7th offensive snap. That pretty much kept this game alive on Twitter for the first half.
I watched. Why did I watch most of this game? I watched most of the game.
I watched most of this game, too. I mean, it was awful. I hated it.
It was. I mean, like,
they were showing it on the big screen in Happy Valley.
I never thought that I would, like, have to endure, like, hoping that a Mike DeBoard-coached offense won again.
Yeah, that was not fun.
I was like...
It was not fun at all.
I was like, come on, Mike DeBoard. And I was like, oh, my God, I remember what this is like.
Yeah, but believe it or not, the Michigan section of the press box was, pretty bitter about that whole experience as they were reliving it.
There's always, like two people in the comments when we start bagging on DeBoard that are like, he had a good record. And I was just like, can you vote? Please tell me you can't vote. So, yeah, Mike DeBoard. I watched Mike DeBoard, and I hoped he won. Surprise, he didn't win. Finally.
He didn't even score a touchdown. What a stunner.
Oh, my God, that's right.
From an IU standpoint, I'm pretty sour on Tom Allen just because he hired this guy. I mean, I know he's done wonders with the defense, but there's 8 senior starters on this defense, and it doesn't have a ton of depth. So I think this defensive program thing is a blip, and there's nothing on offense right now. And I guess I'm like, really, dude, this is who you hired to run the offense when IU has like the 1 year they're going to have a good defense. It's like, oh, get everybody out of here and let's just start from scratch again.
Yeah. Just hire any random FCS coordinator and he would be a better fit for his personnel.
Give Bob Stitt a shot at that job, right?
Yes, sir. All right, Wisconsin 38, Maryland 13. Yeah. The Bortenschlager didn't go that well.
No.
Bortenschlager got badgered. Wisconsin had 9 drives in this game, guys. On one of them, Jonathan Taylor fumbled on the first play, and then on another drive, it was kind of like this weird thing where Maryland fumbled the ball on a kickoff, so Wisconsin had like 25 seconds, and they ran a couple plays and then try to field goal and they missed it.
Oh, that's right.
Okay, so those are 2 drives. On the other 7 drives of the game, they averaged 8.6 snaps per drive and 61.2 yards per possession.
It is a fully armed and operational cheese curd station.
Totally.
Yeah. All right. Well. Yeah. Well. 8-4. Here we come. Then, here we come. 8-4. Don't hang your head, Ace.
8-4.
Contribute. You had some good hockey talk. Don't drop off the mat. Thank you. Good contribution,
hockey?
Ace. Well, we're not talking hockey with Ace.
No. Yeah.
We're just making fun of Ace for not watching hockey, which is not really a good thing to make fun of someone for, because it's like, oh, you didn't watch that thing? No, I did not. Ha ha ha. It's not.
Also, like, I'm the basketball beat writer, man. I can only watch so much.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Ace was busy this weekend because the new KenPom ratings dropped yesterday, right when he got back from Happy Valley.
See?
He had no time for hockey.
He was busy listening to
And
music.
I was totally aware of that. I did not just learn that when Jamie said it right now.
He was too busy listening to me complain about meat crime.
Yeah, that is what took up a decent chunk of my time today.
Just, hey, Brian, stop calling me. I know about the meat crime. Ace, you don't understand.
It's pretty upsetting.
All right, goodbye, Jamie.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Mace Ambender along with Brian Cook. It actually is Quiddy Pay, so I guess I've lost a job title.
It better than us.
Nobody.
Yeah.